This is the Saxo Market Call, the daily financial markets podcast, across asset classes and around the world.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Monday, 15th of May, 2023. On Friday, not a tremendously volatile session by any means in the equity market, but we did see a bit of risk off, and especially late in the session as the dollar was rallying a bit. It rallied even more steeply on the release of the University of Michigan sentiment report and the sort of the worst of all worlds. You have lower sentiment but higher inflation expectations. So that expectations number coming in at 53.4, I believe it was. I'll have a chart of it later in the podcast. Yes, 53.4, but it was the inflation expectation suddenly coming up to 3.2%. That's a new high since 2011 that got the market on edge a bit, certainly got treasuries on edge, and we saw them selling off and a little pop in yields, but we're still mid-range there. We're just waiting and waiting for that range that's been established over the last couple of months to break. Important to note, there was a number last year, so 3.1% was the highest for that data series for inflation expectations for 5 to 10 years for the University of Michigan survey. Hit twice in 2022, but one of those months was in June, and it initially read at 3.3%, but the final edition of that survey was revised down to 3.1%. So there you have it, supposedly a new high for the cycle, stretching back to 2011 in inflation expectations. And that dump in sentiment, not great news, but of course it's just one survey, and directionally reflected by the consumer confidence, the conference board one, but just another data point, Peter. And where are we supposed to find inspiration these days in terms of the technicals, in terms of momentum? I'm not really sure, but it's getting pretty tough to talk about the daily moves in the market here.
Yeah, so we probably just should talk about something else then, because. Well, we can have a look a little bit on the global industry group's performance there, one day performance. So that reflects Friday's session in the global equity market. And we talked a lot about last week that a lot of positive vibes around the pro-cyclical sectors, that was sort of a theme that that was there. And that reversed on Friday. You can see all the defensive sectors more or less were the best performing. So utilities really leading the gains there, and you had car makers leading the declines. So, but not, as you said, the energy is has fizzled out of the market right now, that's for sure. We have the VIX at 17. Everything seems quite stable. It seems like the year of no big changes, or at least for now. But there is one change, and I've put in here the 12-month forward earnings estimates, and I've highlighted when the Q1 earnings season started. So that's the lighter blue line there. And as you can see in this chart here, that for every week that has passed, the earnings season has managed to raise the expectations at least 1 year into the future. So that's, again, I think it's adding, John, to this confusion. We've talked a lot about confusion, and I think you have indicators pointing in so many directions. I mean, whether you're a bull or a bear, I think you can easily find the 20 indicators that can convince you that you're right and you're either optimistic or pessimistic outlook for the global economy. I'm not so sure where I'm leaning. I'm very much in a very balanced, neutral, 50-50 mood. I can easily see the case actually for going in both directions. I think there's a lot of things where it's too early to say, and we just need more data points. And I think that's also the position the Fed is in, and potentially that is the risk for the forward curve on Fed funds futures, or the SOFR futures, sorry, I should say that, pricing in Fed funds rates, because, I mean, time at one point could run out getting enough data points for them to react fast enough to what the curve is pricing.
Yeah. Fed fund futures do exist, of course, and yes, are heavily traded, but the SOFRs is just where the liquidity is in the market, not specifically related to the Fed fund rate, but of course it does incorporate that, given that it's a three-month interest rate out into the future. So in FX, so quite a bit of movement in places in FX. So we've seen this dollar come snapping back here, as we're seeing. I think the market has sort of extended that relative spread on the rest of the central banks to the U.S. to its extreme, and now we're all sort of treading water and wondering what's going to happen next. What's the shoe to drop? What sets the animal spirits in motion here? So we sort of mean reverted back to the range in many places. Classically, the one late last week was New Zealand dollar versus the U.S. dollar, because we got contrasting inflation expectation surveys, and the Kiwi was sort of outperforming based on their forward curve. Then their inflation expectations report was weak, and then the U.S. one, at least for the Michigan sentiment survey, was strong. and it just dives back into the range. So again, mean reversion, range trading. We saw it a bit in the case of the yen as well. These yields popping back higher, send dollar yen back towards the 137 area. Or I should say it's just about 136, 137 areas where the 200-day moving average is there. It just feels like every attempt for the market to stick its head up in one direction or the other, and it gets chopped off and it has to head back into the range. So what are we waiting for? I'm not entirely sure, but I think part of it is the debt ceiling, then the nervous weight around that, and then the ensuing liquidity pinch there could be as well once the Treasury has to build back up its account. So we'll have to wait for that, I think, in terms of moves. So similar to that, we saw sterling basically weak after its attempt to run higher after the Bank of England meeting failed to produce any new catalyst to the upside or to sort of confirm or support that rally. And then rounding out the FX space, the Turkish election looks like it's headed for a runoff, but it also looks like that Erdogan has a pretty comfortable lead over the main opposition candidate. He, as far as up to the point this morning, it was at 49 point something and didn't have the 50% needed to avoid the runoff. He's set for a victory in 2 weeks' time. Just want to point out, so basically untradeable in many ways in terms of liquidity and the risk in some ways, the Turkish lira. And some out there are not even allowing Turkish lira. We still list it on the Saxo Trader. And it's important to have this idea that the Turkish policy rate is something like 8.5%, 9%, whatever it is. But it's just totally meaningless in terms of the kind of carry that is available for those that are interested in carry trading Turkish lira, and then the actual rates that are prevailing in money markets in Turkey. And I just wanted to point it out because when you look at a spot exchange rate chart for the dollar, for the lira, you think the currency is going south and in a hurry, and it is in terms of the spot exchange rate. But with all the carry available, people are actually that are taking this risk are actually earning money. If at least according to the Bloomberg's measurements of how you construct a carry trade, and I tried to reflect this a little bit in some Saxo Trader examples there on slide 5, you can see that the forwards are on the order of 5%+ of carry per month. So as long as the spot exchange rate does not lose altitude too quickly, you can see the line on the left there, the orange one, shows that year to date we are up carry adjusted some 11.7% for those that are long the Turkish lira versus the U.S. dollar, despite what you see on a spot exchange rate chart.
Yeah, and one of the, if we move a little bit to the economics of it, so when you have an exchange rate, the spot index, which is in the decline as it is, and the liquidity drying up, what happens is that a lot of the things that Turkey is not producing themselves internally in their economy, like computers, cars, etc., a lot of things that are nice for households get more and more expensive. So everything you import gets very expensive. But on the other hand, and that's a positive for Europe, you can imagine a lot of the construction and building materials that are used in the European construction sector is actually coming from Turkey. And so this lower lira here obviously is a good thing for the European construction sector. They can get a lot of materials much cheaper than if we didn't have these policies. And it is, I think it's an interesting election, John. And we talked about it. Turkey plays an important role in the region as a counterbalance to some of the other powers in the region. So what the implications longer term for the region is, I think it's difficult to say at this point. But it is quite mind-boggling that you can have this share of voters when you basically almost have destroyed the currency.
Yes, over a decade. It played poorly for him as well in the entire terrible earthquake catastrophe. But there are also some that are positioning this as sort of the last chance for Turkey vis-a-vis democracy. Erdogan having already instituted a much more powerful presidency than prior. And what happens? Does that get further supersized, the power of the presidency in his new term, et cetera? So something bears watching geopolitically for sure. All right, then rolling forward to slide 6, I just wanted to chart that University of Michigan sentiment number there, the black line showing that we're working into these sort of multi-decade extremes that we reached during the worst of the inflation panic last year, working back towards those levels. Current situation hasn't quite caught up, and it may or may not. And then on the right, just wanted to point out, I saw some noise and some discussion of the growth in the U.S. use of consumer debt, and especially credit cards. And that right series is basically the Fed's consumer credit card numbers. And you can see that acceleration pretty spectacular. They paid down some of these during the pandemic cash splash, and now it's accelerating back to new all-time highs. And one of these data accumulators saying that credit card balances had grown 20% year on year. So people are clearly using a very high interest rate loans to sort of sustain their lifestyle, I think it's a concern. I think it's something that's going to lead to wherever we eventually do hit a recession, and something like a credit expanding at that pace is definitely a worry. All right, Peter, you have one stock on your stocks to watch today, this interesting story from Siemens Energy.
Yeah, we mentioned it recently, and I wrote also recently a little piece called The Little Known Risk to the Green Transformation. And here I laid out the argument that, you know, it's fantastic that we have this penetration adoption and of electric vehicles. We have all these this electrification and they push, and it's all wonderful. But one of the things that definitely is not in control of Tesla, they're doing everything they can to control the whole supply chain, vertical integration, charging stations, etc. But the growth is at risk if the grid cannot keep up. And that's the news that are constantly coming out from Europe, is that these overloadings of local transformer stations, when you're plugging all these heat pumps and electric vehicles, huge demand. We're probably seeing one of the biggest engineering and systems transformations where we've ever seen in Europe, because it's not only the hardware. We have a very old grid in Europe that needs to be upgraded, and then we have to massively expand the existing grid. We need to create energy storage systems. We need new software for both monitoring and deploying, the charging and decharging of the electric system, etc. This is a big thing. And Siemens Energy, which is the energy division spinoff from Siemens, they have five different divisions. One of them is grid technology. Another one is the gas turbine production, where they are the largest player in the world. Another division is the Siemens Gamesa wind turbine business. So they have a lot of different assets within the energy transformation and portfolio there. And what they said in this morning is that, first of all, they're lifting their fiscal year guidance on comparable revenue growth, so 10 to 12% from previously 3 to 7%. This is the change in just one quarter. So 3 months ago, it was 3 to 7. Now they're hiking that by 7 percentage point. That's quite a bit. Look at the Q2 order numbers here. In Q2, they have it's not following the calendar year. So their Q2 ended in March, 31st of March. And with that quarter ending, they had 12.3 billion in orders versus 8.9 billion expected by analysts, which is quite a big beat, to say the least. And they say, this is a quote, based on enormous demand for grid building in Europe. I think this is a really key signal. And as I said to you, John, it's difficult, of course, to measure, but this whole war in Ukraine and the big push, both on military but also to get independent from Russia and just basically rebuild and transform the entire way we do energy here in Europe, is just a massive government sector impulse into the economy. I'm actually quite excited about it. To me, it feels like a very positive thing. We always talk about Europe being this sick old man, and suddenly we're talking about massive growth. I mean, last time I checked, Siemens Energy orders were up more than 200% compared to a year ago.
That's a huge number.
It is.
All right. Now we have earnings season still grinding on. A couple of very interesting names there, actually, on slide 8. So where are you putting your focus on these names reporting?
Yeah, I have three names this week, and it's on each continent, you can say. So today, Trip.com, they will be reporting in the during the US session. So it's the China's largest total travel services company, you can call it. You can see here, I've put in a little insert here on slide 8. You can see the Q1 numbers expected, almost 100% growth on the top line. And that's, of course, the Chinese reopening. So we know the first quarter is going to be quite explosive, because finally Chinese people can get out and do other things and, you know, just be in these lockdowns. So that's not the big focus point. I think the focus point is, what are their forward indicators suggesting in terms of the summer months, so the Q2 and the Q3? What are the bookings looking like? Because I think it's that we have all this noise around the Chinese reopening. How strong is it? Is it mixed? Is it only in the export sector we have the problems because of inflation in the Western world, you know, lowering the quantities produced out of the world's factory? And we have had some indications on the consumer side, JD.com last week, suggesting actually that the consumer part of the economy is actually doing okay. So I'm very much looking for this, John. And then Home Depot. Home Depot is the U.S. largest home improvement retailer, and they also have wholesale sales to constructors, etc. But their growth rate is slowing down pretty dramatically because of the high inflation. Households are diverting their spending elsewhere. Also, the high interest rates make it more expensive to take out a loan to do a home improvement. So they're pressured both on the top line and the margin. And then the third one I have in focus today, I have others, of course, you can see with the blue, markings there. But then Siemens, of course, being Europe's largest industrial company, I'm really looking forward to hear what they're saying in terms of the outlook for the European economy, because we talked about it before, John. It really looks like that European companies, for the first time maybe in my career here at Saxo, are doing better on a relative basis to US companies. I'm really curious to hear whether that will be confirmed as well from Siemens. The analysts are quite positive. I mean, Siemens expected to see a 10% growth rate on the top line, and this is not a small candy shop. It's actually a very large business across many continents.
Yeah, and that's Siemens versus Siemens Energy, which was your earlier spiel. So Monday's today, Siemens Energy reported, and then Siemens on Wednesday.
Yes.
And there is a heavy U.S. retail component there, as you mentioned, the Home Depot, and then further out the week, Target and Walmart. And it's so interesting to see, as we've talked about Druckenmiller last week, noting that he's concerned anecdotally on some retail sales stories that he's heard. It's one of his areas where he sees and suspects that we're headed into a recession here, that plus the concerns surrounding the credit crunch from the recent banking turmoil. So we have tomorrow the U.S. April retail sales, certainly the highlight data-wise of the week. If we look at the calendar there on slide 9, some little bits and pieces coming in today. We have that very confusing Empire Manufacturing improvement last month that was just absolutely nothing because all the other ones were basically very weak again. So we'll have a look at that to see if there's any resolution of the confusion there. A couple central bank speakers, but I would say the U.S. retail sales picture, and then as well the latest on the debt ceiling, if we get any latest, whether they're going to take this constitutional crisis route by invoking the 14th Amendment, as there's some discussion of, or if there's some more practical backroom deal that can be done on this. We have to stay tuned for that because we could be getting into crunch time in early June on that issue. And then the G7 on Friday, we've talked a bit about that. Some interesting new announcements likely there surrounding sanctions on Russian exports, energy and otherwise, but as well, potentially the U.S. at least, trying to get other G7 members to announce targeted investment restrictions in China. Certainly, I think they're going to do their own on go-alone measures at minimum on that front. Those have been sort of pre-announced or flagged. It's we'll hope for an interesting week ahead. Let's take it one day at a time, and we'll be back tomorrow with the Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.